Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Is this a good conference? Bad conference? What have you gotten from it?
I think, you know, for me, it's just been an opportunity to connect with people on different topics. We've been talking about our facility needs with different legislators and business leaders, and we've done a lot of work internally that we've owned that really no one can do but us, around selecting better curriculum, expanding music and art, expanding professional development. That has nothing to do with money or other people, but there are other issues like our facility needs that need support outside of Detroit, and I've used Mackinac and this conference as an opportunity to engage with people that are typically hard to get on a calendar, and you can do it one after another. And our opportunity these past couple of days is just to articulate the achievements we've had over the last 2 years, but also to articulate the ceilings that we have on a couple issues, facilities and equitable funding across school districts in Michigan, where when you look at Southfield, Farmington, and Grosse Pointe, because of local property taxes, there's a $130 million difference between Detroit and these districts. And that's going to affect how we pay teachers and how we address facility issues.
Mayor Duggan is actively seeking right now investors to invest in the neighborhoods, you know, $1 million annual investors. And there's talk about getting, you know, there's a direct relation, correlation between education and the talent gap in the state of Michigan. So a lot of companies are interested in getting an educated workforce. Will you be pursuing any type of investment, whether it's from various corporations or outside investors?
Well, the mayor's office and the workforce development team has done a good job of raising money to revamp Breithaupt and Randolph, two career technical education centers. And I think that type of political engagement and investment in those two schools could be what we look at across the entire district in multiple schools. And so we are starting to have more specific conversations about investment in certain neighborhoods. Our vision down the road as we rebuild the district is that every child and family looks to send their child to the neighborhood school. And so as we think about neighborhood redevelopment, we also have to think about redeveloping that traditional public school in the neighborhood. And so I think in the future we will start to see more collaboration between the school district, the mayor's office, and the private sector on investing in schools, the facility in schools, as we see small businesses grow, as we see neighborhoods being redeveloped. That investment has to spread to the local traditional public school as well, because it's mutually beneficial. If you invest in small businesses in new homes and you invest in that school, it's likely that people will move to that neighborhood and send their children to that school, which you just create stability and you create what is normal in other parts of the country that has not been normal in Detroit, with disinvestment in education and students leaving the school district in general.
Dr. Vitti, Charlie Langton reported on WWJ yesterday that one education leader at the Skillman Foundation says that of the roughly 10,000 high school seniors graduating from Detroit, only about 1,500 could pass the basic skills and math tests required for a job at Fiat Chrysler. You know, what's your reaction to that, and what's your plan for that?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I know where that statistic came from. We all know that a lot of our students are not where they should be as far as literacy and math, so that there's a legitimate concern that not enough students that would be interested would be ready to take on that job, but we'd have to look at the statistics behind it. I think that the work that we've done this past year in changing the curriculum at the K-8 level to meet grade level standards, the reality is when we came in and started doing this previous work at the district, the curriculum used was below grade level. So a student in fifth grade was really being exposed to second grade level curriculum. And so that changed this year. We're going to change the curriculum next year in high school so it meets the expectations of the standards. That will naturally have a positive impact on students. I think as we move our career academies to be aligned to industry, so for example, the FCA announcement in building a advanced manufacturing career academy at Southeastern through FCA dollars will give students a clear direction of what they can aspire to be able to do. So starting in ninth grade, they can take courses linked to advanced manufacturing, which will only motivate them to work harder in their day-to-day academic work to be eligible for these jobs after high school. A lot of our kids are certainly talented and able to take on these jobs, but they just don't see the opportunity in their day-to-day lives. So as we give those opportunities in a more direct way, they'll step up and respond to that, but they just have to be able to see what they can achieve with concrete opportunities, and they haven't always seen that.
Standard, you know, they're calling it the educational state in Michigan a crisis right now. One of the factors, I guess, or the assessments for that is the third grade reading level, and in Detroit it's pretty bad.
Right.
And they're asking, some people are, to hold back an entire, everyone who cannot read, reach a certain level of reading in third grade, to be held back. Do you support that? Because if there's 70% of the students in third grade in Detroit aren't able to read, you hold that entire class back, or 70% of that class, how does that benefit the child, and therefore the students are coming into that third grade the next year?
Yeah, I would say one thing that has been helpful as far as a point of conversation at this year's conference has been the reality that the challenge in education is not just a Detroit challenge. It's a Michigan-wide challenge, and I think that understanding has spread to the business community, to legislators, and often over the past decade, it's been a conversation about Detroit. Well, we need charter schools in Detroit. We need vouchers in Detroit. And we've not recognized that Michigan lacks a comprehensive, coherent system of standards, accountability, and support. It's optimistic for me to see that conversation change. As far as retention, there's no best practice, there's no research that indicates that widespread retention in third grade is effective. And so the MDE just released the cut scores that would be applied to third graders based on the MSTEP score, the state assessment. We think it's a fair cut score. If we apply that cut score to last year's third graders, 20% of our third graders would be eligible for retention. And of that 20, that would drop to 15% because English language learners and those with special needs would be automatically taken out. So we then drop that to 15%. And then we can apply other exemptions like a portfolio that demonstrates grade level performance, parents opting out of the retention, taking an alternative assessment that would determine grade level performance. So every year we're looking at, on average, 3% of third graders being retained in Detroit. We're probably looking at a number similar to that, maybe 5%, which I think is fair with the exemption. So I think that's where we'll stand next year when the third grade retention law is implemented, mainly because the cut score is fair, not just being at grade level, but a threshold that truly identifies students that are significantly below grade level.
Dr. Vitti, did you have enough teachers for all the kids this year? And number two, just from a personal standpoint, I had one fantastic math teacher in 12 years of education, fantastic, and it really got me to learn algebra and trig. How are you using technology to share the shining lights in science and math to a broader group of students?
Well, when we started this work 2 years ago, we had 275 vacancies. We're down to 120. We believe that over this spring, summer, we'll drop that down even lower. And so that's something that we continue to work on. We've increased teacher salaries by $6,000 on average over the last 2 years. We're going to make another deep investment in teacher salaries. We are hitting a ceiling, though, when you look at the revenue that's generated in Detroit and the disparity, or the disparity with the district versus other districts. But with technology, next year, all of our K-8s will have one-to-one technology distribution. So for every student, there will be a laptop. We are investing in TV interactive monitors, so every core classroom will have that in the classroom. We're utilizing something called iReady, where students can work on reading and math lessons on a laptop. In high school, we're using Khan Academy, which is an SAT platform, so that's being used more readily. We do see in the future the use of virtual school more for students that want to accelerate their learning. So all things that we're building in our district as we rebuild.
You're starting your third year now. What are your biggest challenges been so far, and how are you dealing with that? Is it money, or is it getting money?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I've said this, I said this earlier, there were things that we had to fix that had nothing to do with money. New curriculum has nothing to do with money. More professional development, nothing to do with money. Just changing the culture to focus on results and performance has nothing to do with money. Being better with customer service, how we're dealing with student discipline, how we're engaging our parents, nothing to do with money. And those are things that we've been working on the last 2 years and continue to work on. I think the greatest challenges moving forward will be linked to facilities and how we create equity and funding to then create equity in teacher salaries. I think those are the two big issues that we need to address moving forward, while we still refine the things that we own around just creating a different culture around how we treat children, how we engage children, how we educate children, and how we own performance. In Detroit, there's been such inconsistency of leadership, different and inconsistency with governance models, that we haven't been focused on performance. And it's a difficult conversation to have in Detroit because the support has not been there, the resources have not been there, but we have to stop saying that our kids can't do better. We have to stop saying that, well, we show up every day and that's good enough. Our kids deserve an excellent education. And that means holding principals, teachers, and myself accountable to results. And that's why we've supported a school grading system where all of our schools next year, along with charter schools, are going to receive a letter grade of A, B, C, D, or an F starting next year based on this year's performance. It's a difficult conversation to have because people are afraid that that's going to be used against them. But we have to start moving to having a conversation around performance because we can't let another generation go through DPSCD at scale and not be educated the right way.
Dr. Vitti, I was the school beat reporter 30 years ago for WWJ. When I did that report, the police told me there were 17,000 felonies committed in the Detroit public schools that year. That's a big number. Are the schools safe today?
Yeah, I think the schools are safer than they were, during that time. One reason is schools, the size of schools have decreased. So when the size of schools decrease, you can create a better one-on-one relationship with children. But we have to realize that schools don't create safe neighborhoods. Safe neighborhoods create safe schools. It's not the inverse. And a lot of the challenges that we have in school around discipline and safety is really a manifestation of what's happening either in homes and in neighborhoods. So when parents don't have access to good jobs, and parents often rely on crime or criminal activities to make ends meet, then that trickles down to children. When parents are working 2 to 3 jobs and they're not at home, that has an impact on children. When parents are stressed, they're angry, they yell and scream and hit children, then that results in children acting out when they go to school. So we have to be real and honest about what is the relationship between unsafe neighborhoods and unsafe schools. It's not the reverse. So if we want safer schools, yes, there's a level of ownership that we have on that, but we also have to offer our adults, parents, good jobs, access to good health care, stable living conditions, safe living conditions, safe neighborhoods. That then leads to greater stability and children being able to go to school every day focused on learning, not focused on survival.
Is truancy still an issue, and how are you dealing with that?
Yeah, so truancy has improved. So chronic absenteeism has gone down by 6 percentage points this year. Excellent attendance defined by 95% or higher attendance rate has improved by 7 percentage points. And that's mainly based on, one, we're actually analyzing attendance. So we're holding principals accountable to ensuring that attendance is improved. We've provided an attendance agent at every school to do home visits and actually engage with parents when children are absent. And so that has improved. Do we have work to do? Absolutely. But finally, I think we're making a dent in the problem and showing principals and teachers that things can be done, and we're not taking a back seat to saying, well, this is just how it is. That culture, we're challenging that culture, and some schools have seen a 50 percentage point decline in truancy only because we've shown that by adding resources and actually reviewing and talking about the data and saying, as a principal, you are responsible for improving chronic absenteeism, and if you're going to shy away from that, then you can't be the principal. Plain and simple. That's a different conversation in Detroit, and we're going to have more of those conversations, and we're going to have more principal changes until people wake up and realize that you get a paycheck to move the needle. You don't get a paycheck to show up to work every day. You got to move student achievement. You got to move chronic absenteeism, because if you're not going to do that, then why are we here? We can always put a superintendency in the role. We can always put a principal in the role. But are we there to make a difference, or are we there to just show up every day? That's what the change is going to look like in Detroit. And that's what we're going to push. There's going to be resistance to that. But that's how we're going to create a new and different experience for children.
For me, one final question. Little Johnny or little Jane gets in the kindergarten in Detroit schools. They got 12 years of schooling in your district. 13 years if you count kindergarten. What is your vision for that student at the age of 18, 19 years old? Where do they go from there?
That I think your question is what excites me most and gives me the most optimism, because it's hard to change culture with certain students and teachers that have maybe been in the system for a while, because there's a culture link to that. But I'm really excited about the work that we're doing around curriculum and exposing students to grade level expectations at early ages. And I think in the years to come, whether it's on national assessments or longitudinal data, we're going to see what children can do. You know, you mentioned this notion of a talent gap. I think we have an opportunity gap in Detroit. And for too long, we have let the status quo reign in Detroit to say, well, kids are poor. Our kids are stressed out, and they're just trying to survive. That is real. But at the same time, there's brilliance in our children. There's a perseverance in our children that has not been captured and realized. And if we can take the great math teacher that you had and scale that great math teacher from pre-K to 12th grade, then we'll be talking about, at scale, kids being competitive and going to college in the world of work. Right now, we only talk about that in individual pockets with individual kids from individual schools, and that has to be scaled. And I think, you know, to go back to your question, if we're able to do this work over 10 years with consistency and a rhythm and changing the expectations, we'll be talking about kids in Detroit in 12 years getting the same opportunity that kids have in suburban districts. Because not only are they as talented, I think that there's a level of persistence that they have that suburban kids don't have. And so if you give them the right kind of exposure and opportunity, they'll actually shine at a higher level than suburban kids, because they've gone through more stuff. And they're tougher, they're more resilient, they're more street smart. And you couple that with a book level of intelligence and exposure, they're going to fly and rise to a higher level than your average suburban kid. We just have to create the consistency and scale of that opportunity, and that's just changing culture. So we've been at it for 2 years. We're just going to stay at it. And just if we get the time, the political space, and the extra resources, we're going to make it happen. We just have to have those factors and that opportunity to continue with the work that we've had and not do it for 5 years and then be cut at the legs to not be able to do it moving forward.
Do you hope to be here in 12 years?
I'm committed. I have a 5-year contract. I'm in year 3. I'm looking forward to extend that contract for another 5, if the forces that be allow that to happen. And I'm good for a 10-year run. After that, I'll be 50, and I think probably people will get tired of me. They're already getting tired of me. So, and I'm only in year 2. So we just got to keep on at it for another 8 years. After that, we'll see where we're at. But I think over 10 years, we'll have a body of work. We'll develop a new generation of leaders and teachers, and we'll slowly begin to change the culture.
Gross Point is closing a school or two.
Right.
Farmington this year, Harrison High School is closing, right? Where does enrollment stand, and do you see school closings at all in the future?
No, so our enrollment has increased for the first time in over a decade. I don't foresee any school closings linked to enrollment. If we have school closings, it's part of the broader work of facility improvement where... To go back to the Cody example, does it make sense to put $50 million into an old building? Or instead, it probably makes better sense to build a new building at $20, $30 million, close the old Cody, and then do it that way. So that's the only way I can see schools closing, not linked to enrollment, but to right-size the district and offer the community a set of school buildings that meet the right expectations for 2021. Not because of enrollment issues.
Is you mentioned at the very beginning of money and needing building improvements. Do you have a number in mind? And is that a trip to Lansing to say, hey, I need $100 million or something?
Yeah, the number right now, if nothing changes in 4 years, will be $1.4 billion. That number, I think, will be adjusted as we right-size the district. I think we have to get to a point where seats relatively meet students. Right now there's an imbalance of that. And then we also have certain neighborhoods that have multiple schools that are not fully utilized. On the other hand, we have other schools in other neighborhoods where they're all utilized and residential rates are increasing. So that's where we have to have a holistic, comprehensive plan to right-size the district but offer buildings that children deserve. Because children know that the school that they go to with a leaky roof or a school where the school has to close because the boiler doesn't work is not the same type of building that exists on the other side of Wayne County. And they know that. And we're sending a wrong message to them on a day-to-day basis when we pretend that they are okay with that different set of expectations. That has to change in Detroit, and we're committed to doing that. And that's where the new number will be generated based on trying to right-size the district.
Real quick, teacher contract talks, how are they going?
So they're going better than what you may think or hear. We were committed to raised teacher salaries for those most veteran teachers at levels pre-emergency management, and we were looking to double the amount of money that teachers would get on the lower level of the steps by a one-time increase. So a step would only give a teacher an $1,800 increase on the lower levels. We were going to offer $4,500. But the challenge was that was a one-time increase rather than a reoccurring increase. So DFT wanted a step, a traditional step, and so we had disagreement on that. We're now going to go back to the drawing board and offer a step, which means an increase that is reoccurring but lower than a bonus. And so we're restructuring that. We're waiting for DFT to give us their official counteroffer. But we both want the same thing. We want teachers to make more money. We want teachers to be the highest paid in the country. But we have a shortage of revenue to do that. So then the disagreement is, how do you get there? and based on what the union want and what we want, but we want the same thing. So at some point, we're going to both agree to disagree or agree to agree on a set of offers that is realistic based on where we're at right now, based on our funding conditions.
Obviously, no one wants a strike. Does that enter into your mind of, hey, there could be a strike?
Well, there always could be a strike, but I don't believe teachers want that. I don't think the union wants that, and we certainly don't want that. That would be a significant distraction to the progress that we've developed over the last 2 years. I think strikes happen when administration becomes deaf to what the union or the teachers want, or likewise, the union becomes deaf to the reality of what the district is facing. And I don't think either one of us want that, and I don't think we're moving into that scenario. I think DFT knows that they have an administration that cares about teachers, and we know that we have a union that cares about teachers. And so it's just a matter of working out the details to get to where we need to be. But I think a strike is not imminent, and I don't think anyone benefits from a strike, and I think the teachers recognize that. We're here for kids, whether you're the union or the administration, and we want the same thing, children to be better educated and teachers to be better paid. So there's a way to figure that out without a strike.
My last question is, Jeb Bush is talking today about education, right? And have you talked with him in the past, and what do you learn or what are you hoping to hear?
Yeah, I actually worked for Jeb in Florida. I was the deputy chancellor for the Florida Department of Education. And so I didn't agree with everything, and I can say that even working underneath him. But what I will say about Governor Bush is that he was a visionary, and he believed that public education needed to improve, and he was very sharp with what he wanted to succeed, and I think Michigan can learn from that. What he created was coherency around reform, and we haven't had coherency in Michigan around K-12 reform in a long time. And so he was willing to put his political capital into reform to say the legislature has to be aligned, the commissioner has to be aligned, the state board has to be aligned, because we have to do things differently. And he got people in the room, he owned the reform, he could articulate the reform, and he forced people to put aside their differences for reform. And when you look at the body of work and you look at the results, you can agree, you can disagree, but you can't deny that Florida didn't get better from his leadership. And this is coming from someone that didn't always agree with his reform. Michigan has been in a place of incoherence and in a place of territorialism when it comes to education reform. Districts have suffered and children have suffered because we don't have coherency around standards, accountability, funding, and support. And hopefully people listen to what he has to say and start to lead, because we don't have strong leadership in education in the state of Michigan, and we need that if children are going to benefit.
With a new superintendent, Dr. Rice in Kalamazoo, is he good?
We'll see. Hopefully it'll be a matter of listening but doing. We've been doing a lot of listening and a lot of talking, and I think Mackinac sometimes reflects a lot of talking, but let's start moving to concrete reform and action and coherency around certain things. You know, Massachusetts has moved the needle in performance because it's done some basic things. It supported a commitment to standards. It was committed to an accountability system, and it was committed to funding that reform. In Michigan, we got the standards right, we have not got the accountability right, and we haven't got the funding right. And this is why we now are bottom of the barrel in performance. I mean, who would imagine that in Michigan we would be talking about results that are similar to Mississippi? I mean, that's where we are right now. We are comparing ourselves to Mississippi. And having worked in the South, that is awful. But we just haven't had coherency in leadership. So I'm optimistic that a new state superintendent can lead us in that direction. But the governance structure is fragmented. You have a governor who the state superintendent is not accountable to that governor. You have a state board that's not accountable to a governor. So the governance structure in and of itself is fragmented. And until you have alignment of accountability, you're not going to have an alignment of policy. And that's why we continue to work in these silos and in frustration, because we don't have coherency.
So you think that we should have a strong governor in charge of education?
Yes. Yeah, I think you should have a strong governor who's empowered to pick a state board or to influence the state board's work, and you're able to pick a state superintendent that is accountable to that governor. If not, it's going to continue to be fragmented.
Interesting. Yeah.
Dr. Vitti, thank you.
Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.